No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our expectations series tonight. We're going to talk about two players, John Jenkins, the nose tackle recently signed by the Ravens, and Ben Cleveland, the now longtime guard and newly versatile offensive lineman for the Ravens, who was re-signed to a one-year deal this offseason. Joining me to do that is Sean Asher. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Ken. I'm really excited to talk about both these guys.
Should be a lot of fun. So let's start with John Jenkins. I'm not even sure who the undercard is on this one. Actually, maybe we better start with why we're doing John Jenkins as opposed to your original choice, which was Ardarius Washington.
Yeah, I was super fired up. Honestly, just because of the nuances of both of their spots on the roster and like how they fit into the plans, you know, Ardarius was kind of interesting to figure out how that's going to work with Starks being drafted. And like, is he now nickel or, you know, but kind of a moot point now, right? And hopefully a speedy recovery for him. And hopefully he factors into the 2026 Ravens plans on a cheap prove it deal.
Yeah, I think, you know, probably more than likely the Ravens are the most likely team that he'd sign back with. But it is, they've lost a player they would have been counting on to play most of the snaps for the season. Maybe not quite all, but most of the snaps of the season, I think at the minimum, he would have had the kind of the Geno Stone role, but he could have played a combination of nickel, either safety spot. Would have been a tremendous piece to have. Malachi Starks lightens the burden a little bit, but the Ravens still very, very short at safety as we enter camp. Really, I think they're kind of in a minus two position right now relative to, a fully what I would want to see going into the season in terms of back-end talent. They've got Sanusi Kane and Bo Braid, but the loss of Washington, very, very big loss for this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Just, you know, pray for a speedy recovery for the guy. The guy works his tail off, and was he a UDFA, right?
UDFA, and he's lost already one full season of, so he actually lost a season of tenure at one point, and then he lost most of another season to injury in 2022, I guess it was, right? Because he played about a game and a half and then he was lost for the season, I want to say.
And it just so sucks before we even get pads on. Like, oh, brutal. Yeah.
And apparently it happened at the training facility and whatnot. I mean, a lot of questions come up which are kind of not tasteful. I mean, first of all, you're doing the right thing to say, you know, congratulations on a speedy recovery. It's natural for Ravens fans to be concerned immediately about what's the effect on the Baltimore Ravens. It's a lot like looking at your own car for damage before you ask if anyone else in the other car is hurt.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the wrong order of things.
Yeah. And I saw a lot of people asking about money, and it's like, yes. Dude, like that's, I don't think the Ravens even want to be in that business, honestly. Like that's a really quick way to not get Derrick Henrys of the world to sign with your team.
Yeah. It would not be a good move, but,
but
apparently the injury happened at the facility while training. So it wouldn't even be a question. Yep. So, obviously a smart deal to do that. And, hopefully he'll want to come back to the Ravens on a 1-year prove it deal, and that'll work out. I think this could not be worse news for Ardarius in terms of how much it's cost him in terms of the career earnings and whatnot, because this is his big chance for a bite at the apple right now.
Agree. And you know, there might be some divisible benefit for both sides to do a 2 or 3 year deal when this recovery happens, you know. So you know, just thoughts and prayers for him. Really hope it's a speedy recovery. Hope he's in good spirits. Hope his head's high. Hope he's ready.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's get on, talk about the players that we're going to today. And we'll start with John Jenkins, just recently signed. He's one of the very old men of the National Football League at 36 years old in July. A 6'3", 327-pound nose tackle. He has bopped around a lot in his career. And I'll bring up his stats of this, but what were your thoughts on the Ravens first signing him?
So I'd never heard the name before. That was my first thought. Who is this guy? Right. And then I did the first thing, highlights. Let's see the highlights. Right. And then, you know, in prepping for this, I went back and watched 4.5 games. You don't realize he's an old man. You don't really see that in the tape. If you start to watch him move laterally, you know, against some zone runs, you're like, oh, okay, that's an old man. But, you know, the initial burst is a lot like Michael Pierce. You know, he's not as big and he's not as powerful, but he's shockingly quick with his initial burst for a man of that size and that age.
Been a very good tackler for most of his career. He's now, by the way, he's played, I think this is his 9th different team he's played for, and that might be short because he may have been in camp and lost, but just to go through this, he played 4 years with New Orleans, then finished off 2016 at Seattle, went to Chicago, went to the New York Giants, to Miami, to Chicago, to Miami again, to Las Vegas for 2 years, and set a career high in snaps each of the last 2 years with Las Vegas. So right there, that tells you, you know, he may have something, a little something left in the tank. He had several serviceable years as a rotational nose tackle, I'd say, where he'd had between 400 and about 550 snaps. For the last 2 years, he's had 595 and 606 snaps.
Yeah. And the last 2 years in Vegas, like, he really showed up well in that defensive line with Max Crosby. You know, it was very clear that he was taking benefit of the double teams that Max Crosby was constantly facing. And he's got a really, I'd say, average swim move, but, you know, at that age and at this late of the off-season signing, I'll take an average swim move. And he's got a decent bull rush. And again, you know, that age and this late of a signing in the offseason, I'll take that too.
Yeah, there are a lot of guys out there who play this position who are available. Nose tackle is a large size and shape pool. You don't always get exactly what you want in terms of length, say, or maybe one other factor. But you're getting guys who are similar in terms of their athleticism. The guys in their 30s know how to use one arm longer than two, even if they don't have great length individually. Most of them are two-gap players if they're still hanging around at this age. And some of them have a little bit of pocket compression ability. I would count Jenkins in that group as a guy who has the ability to create an amoeba pocket that could give some quarterbacks trouble, have them seeing color a little bit earlier than they otherwise would. But he's not a guy who's going to, you know, get after the quarterback snap after snap to get home for you.
Correct. And I think, to your point, we're not talking about a Pro Bowl player here, right? But what I would like to point out for all the listeners is EDC has done a really good job at signing defensive tackles. Justin Ellis, was it Pecco?
Pecco, yep.
Yep. And both of those guys contributed in major ways for those seasons. And unheralded heroes of those seasons, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, as the 2019 season, they brought in those two guys, and they were part of a incredible on the fly rebuild of that defense, which is probably still the most effective I've seen in my years as a fan. The only other one that compares to it is the 24 defense, where they fixed the back end by sacrificing some of their highly versatile talent to back there, but eventually got rid of two veterans. And oh, now the defense is just fine now. It was great to see. But that 19 defense had a lot wrong with it to start the year. They were trying to depend on Patrick Owosso to be a leader on that defense. That
it was the linebacker we signed. I can't remember his name.
LJ Fort and Josh Bynes, who's kind of Kaiser Soze of inside linebackers. Yeah,
that's right. LJ Fort was the name I'd forgotten.
They got another guy that I'll bring back a name for you. Is Jihad Ward was brought in, and he was very effective. So they used a lot of race car that season. Ward was a guy they could kick inside or play at outside linebacker on early downs, and it'd be like getting Tavius Robinson or something at an opportune time. And then of course the big one, they traded and got Marcus Peters.
Yep.
And that fixed a lot of the issues at cornerback.
Yep.
All right. Let's get back to John Jenkins here for a second, because I don't think he's assured the job. And it's kind of one of the interesting things. I have not seen contract details yet. Maybe you have. Maybe there's something out there on OTC by now. I expect he's making the vet minimum, but there would be a question of guarantees, because a nose tackle signed at this point is probably going to want something in terms of guarantees, whether that's between 25 and 100,000, whatever it might be. But I'm fairly sure he would not be making over the vet minimum.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything online about contract details yet, but I'm not sure he's assured the job. He may be this year's Brett Urban, right?
Yes.
Where it's, he already knows that, hey, we're going to likely end up needing you, but we're on this contract and this is how we're thinking. We got to make cap move, or we got to make roster mechanisms and jump through hoops to do this. But just looking at the position depth, I'd be shocked if he's not a big part of the plan for this year. Like if he's not in that solid rotation snaps for snaps and snap counts. It's just, we've got Washington, Madubuike, Jones, all three of those are back, drafted Peebles. Then there's two guys that I guess have been on our practice squad. I don't recognize either of these names, Odoyile and Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
2-year practice squad guys.
You got Jason Jones, right?
Jason Jones as well, correct. Yep. But to me, it's like, looking at the tape, looking at what he did against the Chiefs and his games against the Chiefs in that division, it's like I'm impressed, And it's the biggest thing I saw as a downside in his game right now is moving laterally against zone runs. He can get offensive linemen, guards, even not great athletic guards, can easily get on his outside shoulder and create the seal for running back in zone runs. Other than that, he looked pretty solid.
Okay. Well, you wouldn't expect that to be a strength really of any nose tackle, even a younger nose tackle. That's often a problem if they're one of the bigger men. Like for Michael Pierce, that would be something. Pierce would be a pursuit player, but he certainly is not a guy who's going to get ahead of his own run pretty
often. Yep.
The other thing that is very appealing is not the right word, intriguing, about Jenkins as a player is what you kind of alluded to, but I want to go into a little more depth, is the fact that he's really the only player on the current Ravens who would make sense for a handshake deal, other than a couple of veteran wide receivers who are not likely to make the team. So you got Keith Kirkwood could fall into this, or Anthony Miller could fall into this, guys they could cut and then bring back. And here's the key. If you want to ever figure out who makes a good handshake candidate, truncate everybody who's in their fourth year earlier, because they're subject to waivers if they are cut. And so you can't risk cutting a player like that, generally speaking. But a 50-year player or higher, and then they have to be making essentially the vet minimum. If they could be making the vet minimum plus $25,000 of guaranteed money or something, that would be okay. But they'll never cut a guy who's making, say, $500,000 of guaranteed money, because somebody else may decide they'll pay him the full salary, and the guy doesn't want to pass up $500,000, and he leaves you for somebody else. So Jenkins is a guy who no doubt about it has probably had that briefing about, hey, you may be cut and then return before the first week of the season. We're going to need you for that. I mean, we need to know you're on board with this. But the Ravens also need to be prepared to be without him if they make that move. They did it, of course, with Brent Urban, with Anthony Levine, with others. It's extremely valuable to get one additional player onto your roster, even though it's less valuable than it once was, because they now have two spots for exactly that kind of machination where you can put a guy on non-season ending IR at the beginning of the year. Normally, if you cut, if you put a guy on IR before the first week of the season, sorry, or with the initial cuts, they're lost for the entire season. So you need
that's new this year.
That is new last year, I believe. Okay. Last year, even the year before. Last year, I think. Last year.
Gotcha.
So now it's basically you're making a decision about the third spot, the third extra guy, and it still has value. It just has diminished value from what it was a couple of years ago. And the Ravens, they love to set up their roster for midseason reinforcements to show up.
Yeah, so to your point, the list of players that could fit those categories are the other guy we're going to talk about, Ben Cleveland, Keith Kirkwood, Anthony Miller, and maybe Joseph Noteboom, but I don't know if you take the risk on
not
a tackle.
Offensive tackle, no way at all.
Yeah,
you're on exactly the right set of players there. Cleveland is a guy I don't think they would do either. I think, you know, he's signed for a year. I'm not sure what Cleveland's guaranteed money is either. He may have some. But if he has no guaranteed money, I still probably wouldn't do it because he's too valuable as a versatile offensive lineman to do that. We'll talk a little bit about Cleveland a little later in the show. What else to say about this? Well, I'm not sure there is a whole lot to say. Why don't we just jump in with what a good and a great season is for John Jenkins? You want to start?
So a good season, I'd say he contributes to a pretty even rotation with Matt Ibike and Jones early in the season. It's not a big fall off when you have to take one of Matt Ibike or Jones off the field.
We got to be careful about the Joneses here because we have to, they have to
Travis keep Jones. Up with them. So Washington's going to get snaps. It's going to happen. Peebles is going to get snaps. It's going to happen. Obviously, I think Matt Ibike and Travis Jones are going to get the most of snaps, probably. And I'd say that next tier is probably John Jenkins, and that's my good season, is that early in the season, he's getting close to the number of snaps that Matt Ibike and Travis Jones are getting.
Okay, my expectation probably a little bit less for a good season, but that's because I think chance is probably 40% or maybe even higher that he gets cut and never plays a game as a Raven, because I think Jason Jones could very well beat him out. In fact, if you really look at this, he has to really outplay Jason Jones by a lot. And I'm not saying it couldn't happen because he's been a good tackler, played a lot of snaps the last 2 years for Las Vegas. I mean, there's reasonable belief that he could outplay Jason Jones, who's, there have been some conditioning issues and some other issues with him during his career at Auburn that haven't made him an ideal candidate to be even drafted in this game. But you're looking ahead at a player who could be here for 4 years versus a player who could be here for one. And so naturally, the Ravens are going to err on the side of the younger player if possible, and that's why you might want a handshake deal with Jenkins, and you might want to also have the possibility, hey, good chance we're going to need you, we'll put you on the practice squad for right now, and we'll bring you up when the time is right. But for me, I here's what I said exactly: has a solid preseason in camp and earns backup nose tackle role. That's the backup to Travis Jones. Plays a limited rotational role, or approximately 15 snaps per game behind Travis Jones, with no particular expectation of play quality. Alternatively, he could be placed in the practice squad and elevated slash promoted as needed in place of Jason Jones. So Jason Jones starts off the season and is not playing well. You've got the opportunity to potentially IR him, or IR him as things naturally occur, IR someone as things naturally occur. It could even be Brandon Williams. I did it again, didn't I? Could even be Broderick Washington. That's on the Ken McCusick bingo card, by the way, is using Brandon Williams in place of a name of any defensive line.
He's one of your favorites, huh?
Well, he was when he's playing. I love Brandon Williams.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that would be a good season. And if I'm trying to pick out where's the 60th percentile, I think it's somewhere between him making the roster, at the start of the year or making the roster a little bit later.
Yeah, so I guess the only difference is there, I'm thinking it's a little bit higher snap count. Okay. I'm thinking he's more of a lock to make the roster and a little bit higher snap count. For a great season, I have he keeps that high snap count throughout the season, which means the Ravens don't have to rely on Peebles or Washington as much. And he's the guy that the Ravens want to do the handshake deal with maybe next year.
That's I've got very similar. I say Fitz Ravens scheme slash needs for rotational nose tackle is also part of jumbo packages for short yardage and goal line. That would probably be true in a good season too. Snaps are limited to approximately 20 per game, but with quality at or just below the league average. So, you know, this is above a replacement level nose tackle you're getting. Last year, he was probably pretty close to a replacement level nose tackle, maybe a little bit above. This would be a comeback in terms of game. And maybe it's something that you could hope for with a lower snap count. Maybe a guy, a more rested John Jenkins can give you that. So the Ravens consider him for 2026 roster planning. I also had in there. So I mean, I think we had as similar as we've had for any player in this series to date is our good and great seasons for John Jenkins.
There was one more thing about John that I wanted to touch on before we moved on. I thought it was really interesting that the Ravens, in replacing Michael Pierce and Brent Urban, if we just do John Jenkins and Peebles, they kind of went with more of a versatile fit for both of those players than replacing the big body of Brandon Williams and the all of the different things that Brent Urban could do at a very good or above average level. Like, I don't want to hype the guy up and say he's an all pro, but he was a very solid player who had good fundamental technique. And it seemed like the Ravens kind of went to try to find just more Matabike and Travis Jones stylistic fits in the replacement of those two players. Muted.
That's again on the bingo card, but you also said Brandon Williams there too, by the way. So, but you met Michael Pierce, and what you're really saying is that they're bringing in a second pairing that could be in there, and Brandon Williams could just play five tech, but he'll probably play some three and nose. He's probably their most versatile guy as opposed to in terms of what position he can play. So I could see him, you know, across the line in some different ways. What it really does. Before the Jenkins signing, when we thought it was Jason Jones, the other thing is all the J's in this. When we thought it was Jason Jones, it's a big youth change to go to Peebles and Jones. That's much younger than Urban and Pierce.
Very true.
You're talking about, and I've been basically saying for years they needed to get younger there. Very disappointed to see that the Ravens lost Nash Hutmaker so quickly after rookie minicamp.
That was weird, right? Yeah. And I guess he only had come in as a trial, or maybe it was UDFA money or something along those lines. It was interesting, right?
I don't think there's any UDFA dollars spent on him. But when John Harbaugh was at the podium after the rookie mini camp practice day that was open to the media, he said he thought that Nash Hutmaker had been signed as UDFA, and he pulled this card out of his pocket. I really want to see what was on that card, but he thought that was the case. And we heard from Chad Steele was the guy they always have a PR guy who kind of watches over the interview to basically call it quits or say, move on, next question or last question kind of thing. Kind of get the player or coach out of there. Harbaugh doesn't really need it, but they still have somebody looking over him. In his case, it was Chad Steele, and Chad said, we'll get you that information, you know, he was not on the list on the UDFA roster list, which was weird to me. But then obviously it was just a tryout basis, and Tampa Bay signed him that week.
Interesting.
Very unfortunate because I'd have loved to see a Hutmaker Jones competition this summer. Would just be one of the things to really look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely.
We go back 25 seasons to the 2001 team. I guess it's 24 seasons. The Kelly Gregg, Dwayne Missouri battle right to the end went into one of the most incredibly dramatic preseason roster competitions you will ever see. And each of them had an unbelievable game. I think Missouri had two sacks, both of which he got a forced fumble on. Kelly Gregg dropped the cover, had an interception, had a sack of his own, and recovered one of the fumbles that Missouri caused and ran into the end zone for a touchdown. And that's what made Kelly Gregg a 10-year Raven.
Yep, okay, absolutely. Yep. I think Kelly Gregg was the start of my jersey collection for the lunch pail guys. Like right now I'm wearing Jared Johnson, and it's like it's Kelly Gregg, Jared Johnson, Marshall Yanda. There's a couple more that I have that it's just like those guys that just do the dirty work and don't get any of the glory. Those are the jerseys that I covet the most.
How about a Tylan Wallace jersey for you?
That's not a bad play. That's really not a bad play. I've been thinking about getting Marlins 44, but he's just like, he's too much of a personality. So I'm like, I don't know.
All right. Outstanding. Let's move on and talk about Ben Cleveland a little bit. And he has had a really weird journey through his first 4 years with the Ravens. And we consistently have expected him as the opportunity has been available at left guard each of the last 2 years. It was kind of given to John Simpson a year ago. It was given to Saleh, I think, as bait to get John Simpson's head in the game. And then they, as soon as that was done, this was for in the 23 season, they switched horses in the middle of camp and gave the job to Simpson. And he played reasonably well, had a lot of penalties, but he played reasonably well otherwise during the year, which is kind of like saying she's got a great personality despite her terrible looks kind of thing is in a lot of ways. It's just one of these things that it's very hard to be a great offensive lineman with a lot of penalties. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Last year we thought maybe he gets another chance at left guard, maybe at right guard. I mean, both those positions are open. Daniel Falele is installed almost from the beginning. Obviously a favorite of Coach Joe D. Warhop kept on with him and actually, you know, molded him into a pretty good offensive lineman by the end of the year. And then at left guard, Voorhees got the job to start the year. Then he got hurt, and McCary is the guy, not Cleveland, who replaces Voorhees at left guard. Lots of questions from the media. Harbaugh obviously got very tired of those questions. What was your take on the entire journey there, but particularly the last couple of years?
I hate to get in players' personal lives, and I hate to talk about it, but there is stuff out there. He had a DUI. That's a thing. There's stuff on Twitter I saw. His girlfriend, fiance, is cheating on him. There's stuff like that. And does one thing lead to the other? Do those two things pull your head out of football? Does that kind of unmotivate you about life? Your fiance's cheating on you? I don't know. But like, my bigger point in saying all that, there's stuff out there that says this is what's happening. And we just don't really know. We don't know that it's football, right? Like, sure, the football product of Ben Cleveland, and we've heard about him like walking laps or cutting corners on laps. We've heard all that. But like, we don't know that it's like, is it technique? Is he getting beat? Or is it like, he's not motivated enough. And like, does he come back and is he motivated? You know, it does not make sense to me that the Ravens would sign this man to another contract when there's so many other options out there for what he's bringing to the table if they didn't want him in the building.
Right. Well, there's been some pretty good coach speak since he got back, but you can really tell it's coach speak. I'm going to get into that in a minute. But it's too much going wrong with that doesn't make sense with relative to his on the field play, which has been pretty good in his first 4 years. Last year, he scored a .79, for example, in his very limited number of snaps. He had 41 snaps the whole year. That's not enough. He's the most, this is the really weird thing. McCary, who was the sixth man extraordinaire, you can plug and play him wherever you want. You probably wouldn't want him at left tackle, but he could literally play all five offensive line positions in theory. Right guard wouldn't have been great for him, but you know, he's spent time at almost every position, if not all of them. Now he gets signed, And you look around the Ravens roster, and first of all, they've had a bunch of guys depart. But second of all, they've got some young guys left and some distinctly not versatile guys on this roster. Tyler Linderbaum is a center only. He cannot solve your problem anywhere.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
No one plans for hair loss. But through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober. Or get pulled over, paid for by NHTSA.
Else, you know, if you want to go to look at left guard for Andrew Vorhees, okay, maybe he can play right guard, but he can only play guard. I look at Daniel Faalele. There is literally no other position. He's tried right tackle. He's not going to be able to do it. He's a right guard only. He'll never handle the pulling responsibilities of being a left guard. Ends up, Ben Cleveland is the team's most versatile offensive lineman. Now you could make a case for Garrett Dellinger or somebody who's just getting here being that guy as well. But right now it looks like Ben Cleveland could fill in at four positions if he needed to.
Yep. And it's mind blowing. It really is. But, and maybe that's the reason, right? Maybe that's the reason they want him here. And that's the reason they re-signed him and brought him back for another year. But it is extremely fascinating how this has manifested, because we're not getting anything. We're just getting Harbaugh being snippy and grumpy because, like, you guys signed him. You guys wanted him here. And now you're going to be mad that we're asking questions about what's he doing.
It's even more than that. In Harbaugh's case, the report is that he was Harbaugh's guy when he was drafted. Mm-hmm. And he was a lot of people's guy. I mean, he was enormous lineman. He still is. He's enormous for a guard of the National Football League. But he was a 356-pound lineman coming out of school. And, you know, would have been weird. You know, it's not like he played in a small program. He played at Georgia, and he, you know, a lot of focus on him. Seemed to have some good pass blocking characteristics in terms of how he approaches, in his case, left to right processing of the individual play, because he's a guy who was played right guard at Georgia. And, you know, was that part of it, that he wanted to be a right guard, had the length to play right guard, could handle the pivot, could do that more than he could do some of the things with in terms of pulling? Maybe. I tend to believe there were other elements off field that we will never know, because it's the Baltimore Ravens, that he's late for meetings, he doesn't have a head in the meeting, he's texting or something on the phone during a meeting, whatever it might be, that John or the other coaches are just pissed at him.
You'd have to think that through the years that, even despite all that, he still would have gotten a shot somewhere, right? Because the idea that he didn't take over for Voorhees last year is either they really don't want Ben Cleveland, which doesn't make sense why they re-signed him, mm-hmm. or they really believe that Jones was an okay backup left tackle, which, I'm not there every day. I'm not seeing all the reps, but that seemed brave.
Yeah, I mean, they used Josh Jones a lot last year, so. Again, more JJ showing up, but they used him as a sixth offensive lineman. That's where Ben Cleveland got about one third of his total snaps. This last year was his OL6. But now here's the other thing I look at. I want to come back after this, but the coach speak is one of the things that kind of bothers me about this. Is Harbaugh mentioned that not only is he a guy who can play at several different positions, but he's also a guy who's one of the best field goal block players in the entire league. Now, he did have a block against Washington at midseason. But if you look at the actual record of his special team snaps, he didn't start the year on the field goal block team. Then he came in and played seven straight games in which he blocked a kick. And then he's not on the special teams field goal block unit anymore at the end of the year, probably because of his responsibilities on the nothing else team. Because he's really, it's coach speak. He's trying to find something nice to say about Ben Cleveland. And it's kind of unfortunate that he do this, that obviously has tripwires attached to it, that just doesn't make any sense. Now, do I believe that Ben Cleveland could be an above average field goal block player? Possibly. Why was he off that unit last year? They had Brent Urban. Is that the reason? Was Brent Urban was too good and they couldn't, you know, maybe. Brent Urban certainly blocked a kick in his first NFL game, but I'm having a hard time believing that Ben Cleveland, who was also on the field goal kick team as well, was so irreplaceable in that regard. To me, they clearly signed him for his ability to be a backup and versatile offensive lineman.
Yeah. Then again, though, like, I would not put it past John Harbaugh to eat up a roster spot for a guy who thinks can block kicks six games of the year. Like, as many special teams only players as we have had throughout the years. And I'm like, can these guys contribute anything anywhere else? Like, it wouldn't shock me if it was like, that was like 70% of like John's decision. It wouldn't shock me.
Now, Harbaugh, I'd say, you know, there's a lot of straightforward stuff, and there's some stuff you can take out of his interviews normally that you can take it word for word. But he is one of those guys. There's a lot of reading between the lines to do. And this reading between the lines, I'm already concerned about 2025, because I think what it says about his offensive line play when he's trying to pick out this, you know, bull hockey midseason field goal block stuff is that, you know, he doesn't really think he's going to play offensive line. Now, I'm already bothered by that notion. I mean, it's just, it's, and you can, sometimes he talks about injuries and there's crapola that you could do. And sometimes he'll talk about players at kind of three tiers and he'll really go out of the way with a lot of flowery language. You know, it's probably real when he's giving the mid tier that he get to everyone. It's coach speak. And when he gives the bottom tier that he's really salty, you know, he doesn't like the guy.
Yeah.
It almost always seems to fall in one of those three tiers. You can actually kind of figure out how he feels about a player, in very general terms from that. With Cleveland, I think I would interpret, you know, him talking about his field goal block prowess as basically a slap in the face of his offensive line prowess.
So interesting. Yeah. or EDC and like John, they're like, I imagine they carpool every day, and the day EDC's like, we're going to re-sign Ben Cleveland to another year, John's like, I'll drive myself.
And they do live right next door to each other.
Yeah.
That's a possibility. Okay. So the only other guy I wanted to talk about this briefly is the impact on Tyler Linderbaum, because it's been said Tyler Linderbaum stepped back as a pass blocker, of course, in 2024. Maybe not, of course, but he did. He took a big step back. 23 took a big step forward. And he's now, you know, maybe with the guards he had playing next to him, was about an average pass blocker for the league, possibly slightly above if you rate assignment difficulty in there. In particular, I think PFF scores him a little higher than that. I'll just say that. But it definitely begs the question, did Tyler Linderbaum suffer from not having a big, powerful guard next to him on the left side with McCary? Now, he had Fa'alele, who had other issues, some other technical shortcomings, but honestly, in general, was a pretty darn good pass blocker. The question I have is would he have done better? Would he have had a better season if Ben Cleveland was next to him on the other side?
I could see that. I mean, Simpson had his struggles, right? But he was a lot bigger and stronger than both Voorhees and McCary. It's a fair question for sure.
Yeah. The issues with Simpson were twofold. It was, one was penalties, and one was that he got over his feet too often and was vulnerable to push pull moves. So he'd get out over his feet and he'd be on the ground a lot. So I wasn't real thrilled about that, but the penalties were really the biggest thing. And that's why we came up with the Milla Simpson scale of how many penalties you have relative to John Simpson, who's a very high, you know, number. Ravens last year had a lot of problems with penalties as well, including McCary at left guard having a really penalty riddled season through the first 10 or so weeks of the season before he got himself straightened out. Fa'alele, similar, got himself straightened out over that same last period. I'm dying to ask that question of George Warhop at some point in terms of, you know, what did you do to change that? Or how did you, you know, how did you go about that? It's weird. And I can't say that Linderbaum was not impacted by the guard play. I think he probably, if I had to say one way or the other, I'd say he was. It's just a question of how much.
Very interesting. Now that I'm thinking back to who was before Simpson? Who was our left guard the year before?
Oh, now you test my memory.
2 years ago, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, Cleveland a little bit, but so we're talking the 22 season, and that's the year they had Zeitler.
Right guard.
For 23 also. Say again?
Yeah, right guard.
Yeah, and give me a second. I'll look it up.
While you're looking it up, my point is we had Simpson, which somehow got us a way better comp pick than I thought we were going to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And same thing with McCary, a better comp pick than I thought we would get out of it. Do we go 3 years in a row, maybe four if we look back far enough, and say like, oh, Ben Cleveland's going to start and somehow we're going to get a fourth round comp pick out of that? You know, just because there's a trend of us taking guards that aren't that great of guards and get a lot of penalties and somehow getting good comp picks out of them.
Let me just say that would be an incredibly inefficient strategy, because I think you could have Ben Cleveland right now for 3 years, $9 million. If he was worth a fourth round comp pick, in 2026, I think you'd be much better off trying to sign him to that 3 year deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Because then a team will trade you a second or third round pick for that guard.
If he's worth that comp pick, I mean, I can't imagine the Ravens not wanting him at left guard. I can't imagine it. But hey, here we are in 2025.
He's like texting during meetings. It's like, oh my God, dude. Okay, I get he's not Ed Reed. I get he's not that, but come on.
By the way, I don't know. I'm giving possible reasons when I say texting during meetings or doesn't have a head.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah. It's whatever it is. It's a work ethic problem. All right, let's talk about what's a good season, what's a great season for Ben Cleveland. Go ahead with your good season.
Makes the 53-man roster, is the sixth OL, is average level of play if there's an injury.
Okay.
That's all I could really guess, honestly.
Now, I had to really decide if I thought there was a 40% chance of this occurring, because I'm not sure there is. But a good season for you is no sign of any remaining doghousing by Harbaugh. Is that 40%?
I'm not sure. A great season in my eyes, Ken.
Okay, that's my first sentence. The rest of it is fills in as needed to plug a hole on the offensive line. Impresses with both displacement and torque as a run blocker. Pass blocking continues to be solid. I think if he could do that, first of all, I think he'd have a hard time not impressing with displacement with the player that he is. He makes some mistakes as a run blocker. He's slow and ponderous in some ways that aren't going to be perfect, and I didn't include that in my description. Falele has that too. People who hate Falele or just get tired of seeing the tape, which, by the way, I can completely understand looking at every block of the man's career, that it's at times oafish in nature. I still have to weight it properly or weight it the way I think is correct, and say the guy's not getting penalized as much as some of the other offensive linemen, and his pass blocking is solid, and the pass blocking is an order of magnitude more important. So if Ben Cleveland could do that, I think, you know, things will be fine. And then, you know, you'll see some combination blocks hopefully work out better than they have with more displacement on those. You know, the torque really applies more at right guard, where he's opening the front gate for a you know, right-handed run game in a normal way. But that's my good season. Again, I'm that may be well above the 60th percentile. And I'm wondering which of those elements. Maybe you could answer this for me. Do you think is the least likely to happen? All doghousing to be over by Harbaugh, fills in as needed to plug a hole in the offensive line, impresses with both displacement and torque as a run blocker, or pass blocking continues to be solid. Which one of those is least likely? I'm having a hard time with that.
It has to be the doghouse, because everything else hinges on that, yep. Right? So if he's out of the doghouse, can he do those things? Possible. If he's still in the doghouse, he won't get a chance to do any of those things anyway.
Yeah, great point. And there is some chicken egg here, because if he's forced into play and he plays well, Harbaugh's going to get off his case pretty quickly, I think. I think that, you know, he's done that with, I'm going to try and think of another player where he's done it before, but the big one was giving the left tackle job to Bryant McKinney for the playoffs in 2012. That would be the big one that I would point to. And then he continued on with McKinney, I believe, as a starting left tackle into 2013.
Yep. And I don't even remember it being a thing he had to do, right? Like, obviously, right. It was the better option,
right?
But it wasn't like it was do or die, right?
Right. They could have played the hand they were dealt and gone through with it. But Harbaugh made it what I think was a very bold decision at the time to switch three positions. Sometimes the Ravens never do that in season. They're a one-for-one switch team. They don't even want to move two pieces, though they have done it. Yanda had the one season where he moved to left guard because his right entry. Shoulder had the, yep. Yeah, the, yeah, or actually, I think his left shoulder had the problem, right? So he still had a strength on his right arm, mm-hmm. and he could block inside there better.
Yeah. Yep. And that season when he did Bryant McKinney, we only had Jim Caldwell as coordinator for six games at that point. So like that was bold for sure.
Big risk. I'd love to hear the origin of that and how whoever, whether it was Harbaugh himself or whether he got convinced by the offensive line coach or by Caldwell or by whoever it might have been. I'd really love to hear how that wore out. What were the, who convinced who to make
that was change? Castillo as the OL coach back then, right?
I think you're right.
I think I remember reading something or hearing something that made sense at the time. I don't remember what it is. I'll try to go find it, see if I can dig that out for you.
All right, what's a great season look like?
I literally wrote, I don't know if it's possible. I don't know if it's possible, but if I have to have something, he's given an opportunity to actually win the left guard job. Don't know if it's possible. Don't know if he'll win it. But a great season for Ben Cleveland would be that he's given the opportunity to do so.
At the start of the season, or at some point during the season?
I went through that, right? So he is not going to get the opportunity first, right? They're going to give that to Dellinger. They're going to give that to Emory Jones. They're going to give that to everybody. They're going to give it to Voorhees, right? All three of those guys are going to get an opportunity before then.
And Fa'alele, for that matter, on the right side.
Correct, right? And I don't see Fa'alele getting beat out by him. Maybe if there's an injury in there, then maybe Ben Cleveland gets bumped up the order and has a better chance. But Dellinger, Emory Jones, and
Voorhees
are all three going to get opportunities to get more snaps and more opportunities than them. So you have to have the two rookies prove that they're not ready early, which that's not likely to happen, right? Because the Ravens are going to give them every preseason rep they can to prove that. And then Voorhees has to struggle mightily for Ben Cleveland to even get a chance at the left guard opportunity.
Okay. That's certainly negative. I got two questions from earlier in the show that we had to look up. The first was the 2012 Ravens offensive line coach was actually Andy Moeller. Before Castillo came in after that and was I should have remembered this because I remember Castillo being the offensive line coach when I first started going to camp on a regular daily basis for some times. So anyway, the other guy who was the left guard 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I can't believe I didn't remember, is Ben Powers. So he obviously...
Another great comp pick, right? My theory's in place. Like, Ben Cleveland's going to come out of nowhere, be our left guard, and get us a comp pick somehow.
All right, here's my great season. Wins starting role at some point during the season. So it might be gifted to him. It might be forced. It might be trial by fire, but he wins a starting role. Could even be at center. Okay, I doubt that. I think it'll be at one of the guard positions if it happens. Displays ability to create space with displacement and torque that complement other linemen and the Ravens' run game. So if he gets a chance at guard, he'll be complimenting Linderbaum primarily in terms of what he does. He'll be processing inside out to help with pass blocking. Pass blocking remains at the 2023 level or takes a slight step forward and avoids penalties. Those are the items I have. If Ben Cleveland avoids penalties, he's going to be one hell of a lineman because he doesn't make enough pass blocking mistakes that he will really hurt you in that regard. And the major other way you can hurt your team in terms of stalling drives is with penalties.
Yep. Follow-up question to your great season. What would have to happen for Linderbaum to lose his job other than injury?
I don't think there's any way other than injury.
Yeah.
If you're talking about how to lose it for 2026, it's just a matter of they can't agree on the money.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah. But like even 8 games at horrible play, they're going to stick with him.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
They're going to do whatever they can to try and fix him. Yeah, let me just say, I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, it's not likely to happen. It's so unlikely. It would only be injury. And then follow-up question to that, Ben Cleveland's a better center than Nick Samak, right?
I mean, I think that is a really legitimately outstanding question. Because if you're talking about who can snap the ball better, I'm not sure. It might be Nick Samak. If you're talking about who could do more for your team and brings you a completely different profile offensively, it's easily Cleveland. Because I don't know if there's another center who's ever played the game who's been as big as Cleveland. It just completely changed it. Imagine having, a murderer's row up front with Fa'alele at right guard, Cleveland at center, and name your left guard from among guys, whether it's Dellinger or Voorhees or whoever it might be. That's a ton of size on the inside, more than really any team would show you. The last team I can recall that had that kind of size would have been like the 96 Ravens, who had an absolutely enormous offensive line, like way, it was way ahead of its time. It would have been like the guys from this line barely outweigh it, but they had Orlando Brown and John Ogden at the tackles, and they had Quentin Newyear and who's the guy? Williams. The first Williams. What's his name? It's not Eric Williams, not the guy who came from Dallas. They had another Williams who's been on, he's been on Baltimore talk radio for a fair amount. He used to have a morning kind of analysis thing he did on 105.7, I think. And I've forgotten his name, but he's on the 1996 Ravens and he was good. Or he's pretty good anyway. But they had a huge interior offensive line at that point. And a huge offensive line overall. I think they averaged 332 pounds. So
Wally
Williams, there you go. That's, I apologize, Wally, if you're listening to this. There's no reason on earth for me to forget your name this soon. Anything else on Ben Cleveland before we let this go?
I am now thinking about this roster mechanisms. I'm thinking the reason they re-signed him is for backup center. And in camp, he's going to get the second team reps, and it's going to be a competition between Ben Cleveland and Nick Samak for who gets the backup center spot. And in that spot, Ben Cleveland's got somewhat of a leg up because he knows the offense. He's been around. They know what they're getting. And he's got the versatility we've already talked about.
Okay, so I'm going to toss this out there right now. There's a real question on the Ravens as to whether they keep 10 or 9 offensive linemen on the 53, which severely impacts Nick Samak. If there's 10 offensive linemen, Nick Samak has a much better chance to make it. But he still faces very stiff competition because that's not the only guy. There's Darian Dalcourt is still around. And he'll get snaps in camp, but I, like you, I'll be very, very interested to see how much play Ben Cleveland gets in camp, whether he's the first, second, or third unit guy, and how they have him. My guess is I think, like you, that I would expect him to be the second unit center.
Follow-up question with all of those questions that we're now talking. Ravens depth or roster on BaltimoreRavens.com lists players as OL, guard, and tackle.
Okay.
Do you hold any weight to Emory Jones being listed as a tackle and Garrett Dellinger being listed as an OL?
Well, Garrett Dellinger is a IOL guard center. Do I hold any weight to it? I don't know. I mean, he's played guard in college.
It could just be Ryan Mink. Yeah. That's just like, I think he's this. You know?
I don't think it's Mink. I think Mink is okay. I'm going to try and get everybody's job right, but Mink is like media. So it's the PR group that actually does the depth charting. And they do it by rules that are mandated by the football operations people, which obviously comes from Harbaugh, but they basically don't ever put a rookie in as the starter unless maybe he's the first round draft pick. So it'll be interesting to see how the depth chart comes out if they somehow have Malachi Starks as a backup or something like that, or you see down that Mike Green is the number three outside linebacker or something silly like that. But when Hayden Hurst came in, I think he was the fourth tight end. They've had some very silly stuff over the years. Orlando Brown Jr. was another one who was listed as a backup and in fact did start the year. Not starting, but
I can't see them keeping 10, man. I really can't. Yeah. I don't, if they do, it's like we're keeping 10 so that we can have Joe Nate Boom and then just stash Carson Vinson for the entire year.
Well, they can't. Brutal. They can't cut Carson Vinson and have him on the practice squad. They can IR him, but then he loses his all his developmental time for the whole year is lost, and that would really be sad.
I don't think they want to do that.
So now, you know, just watching how much Vinson is getting coaching from Warhop, I think he wants him around the whole year to basically, you know, be in the room, be on the field. Yeah,
and he was Warhop's guy, right?
He is. It's nothing like muscle memory. You can't you can talk about it till you're blue in the face in the room. If you can't go out there and practice it, you're probably not going to learn it as well. There's that. It's just he has so much wrong technically right now. There's so far to go. There's probably all sorts of bad habits that he got into at Alabama A&M that I would expect him. They want him around the whole year. Yep. Right there, Obviously, that cuts their walking wounded number by one. And it also puts a tremendous amount of pressure to not have basically surplus offensive linemen otherwise. So they're going to have Noteboom. They're going to have Emory Jones. I imagine Emory Jones starts camp hurt, and he may start camp on the PUP list would be my guess. Harbaugh's already said he's not going to be back during OTAs, doesn't expect him back into camp. As soon as that's true, then there's already a bias is not the right word, but there's a tempting like offer to have him be a PUP player that doesn't come back until sometime during the season.
Yep.
I wouldn't want that for Emory Jones because I think he'll get behind developmentally when he's somebody they really need to play well. But on the other hand, you know, the Ravens are very tight on total offensive line spots. I honestly don't see how Nick Samak makes the team. I don't think it's going to be easy for him. And they've got there's a lot of competition even for the top of the practice squad between players like Dalcourt and Bullock and others who probably have a chance to be the practice squad, but nothing else. All right, Sean, always great talking football with you. Love these conversations, animated, great back and forth kind of thought experiment. This is why I always love to talk football with you. Tell folks where they can get in touch with you online.
I am on Twitter at BMORE, BMORE underscore sky, SKY underscore high, HIGH. I'm on there.
There is a story that goes along with that, but I'm going to let him tell it to you and not do it on the show. Other folks out there, other than to say that one of our sponsors would probably be real happy with Sean as a regular, having a regular show here. Other folks out there, if you're interested in doing a film study short, this is the perfect time of the season to do it. Please hit me up with a DM on Twitter with your idea. I'm recorded a fair amount in advance, but we're also taking a vacation coming up, and I want to make sure we have content all the way through. So I want to hear what you're passionate about that we can discuss in about 20 to 30 minutes. Sean, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, bud.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.